Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, and every Friday brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, they have the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. Perfect spot. And that pickle bar is second to none. I love the barrels. I love the dills. But they have a wide variety of great selection at the pickle bar at Brewers Outlet. We are now 6 days away from Thanksgiving. You'll want to stock up now for not only the weekend, but stock up now for the holiday weekend and start thinking about stocking up for the holidays. You want to make sure you have plenty on board. You don't know who's going to drop over or places that you're going to be going. You want to make sure you don't go someplace empty-handed. You want to make sure you go someplace where you contribute to what's going on. You want to make sure that you have plenty on hand in your own home when people stop by. The holidays are coming up, and by the way, there's also great gifts, okay? These also make great gifts at this time of the year for your friends along the way. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. You know what makes a great gift? How about a vehicle? We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up on today's show, we will have for you Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. That'll be in just a few moments. We'll also have on the show today Ryan Dunleavy from NJ.com and the Star Ledger to talk about Rutgers. Also on the show today, we will have Rich Scarsella from the Reading Eagle and Bob Founders from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. That's all coming up on today's show. We're looking forward to it very much. Last night, Louisville taught us all a valuable lesson. Louisville angry tweets after the college football playoff rankings came out. Angry tweets about being number five. Getting involved in the politics. Not ignoring the noise. And then last night went out against a very good Houston team on the road. And Houston beat them 36-10. Louisville angry on Tuesday night, nothing in the tank on Thursday night. You can only control the destiny and the game you're involved in. Penn State has its game tomorrow night at Rutgers. 8 o'clock the kick, 6:30 the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Coming up, it'll be Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, after this. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up for the holidays now. Go on over now to the holidays. That, you know, you can put the game, you can put the show in the car radio. You can put the show in the car radio. Or if you're listening in the car radio right now, you can just go over there. Okay? We'll still be here doing the show once you go in and shop. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar second to none, all at Brewer's Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Plenty of free parking, plenty of help to get the cases out to the car. All right. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State and Rutgers tomorrow night at 8. Airtime 6:30 for the Dietz and Watson tailgate show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Don't forget also tomorrow, Senior Day for Bucknell and Fordham coming up tomorrow. Believe it or not, it's a playoff game tonight in Sealands Grove. It's State High and Williamsport. Should be a pretty good game if you want to catch a high school football game with two really good high school football teams head-to-head. Steelers, after the loss of the Cowboys, now we'll take on the Cleveland Browns. So we bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, are the Cleveland Browns the elixir that the Steelers need right now?
You know, boy, it's hard to answer that question. As poorly as the Steelers tend to play against bad teams, but, boy, if there ever was a definition of an elixir, it's the Browns, and especially it seems like this year. Somehow this is a team that just can't seem to do a whole lot right. But last time the Steelers played a very bad team on which Terrell Pryor was a starter, well, they lost. And that was Terrell Pryor had about a 90-something yard run as the quarterback of the Oakland Raiders a few years ago. So who knows what logic tells us with the Steelers, because for whatever reason, you know, I know they say any given Sunday, and that, you know, rings true a lot, but boy, it rings true for the Steelers more often than anybody, it seems.
Right. Last week, how do you view last week all around?
Steve, I thought it was about as well as the Steelers can play. I think that's as good an effort as the Steelers can give you. Certainly offensively, no one has really done that to the Cowboys' defense this year. Roethlisberger played as well as he can play. You know, they weren't able to run the ball, and I think that ultimately is what lost the game for them, because I think at this point when you look at that defense, Steve, we're just assuming that the defense is only going to do so much and the offense is going to have to outscore opponents. So, as a coaching staff, obviously, they need to continue to try to fix things. But I think when you're analyzing this team, you have to assume that the defense is going to give up four touchdowns and whatever they give up beyond that is whatever they keep a team to other than that is probably a positive. So it comes down to the offense being able to score as many points as possible. It's going to take at least four touchdowns a game, a couple of field goals, and it's almost to the point where this offense can only afford, you know, one, two, three, four drives a game where they don't produce points. Forget three and out. They have to get first downs, at least a couple of them every drive, keep the defense off the field, and that's about it. I mean, you know, Steve, it seemed to me like as I'm watching that game, boy, the defense is on the field the whole time. The time of possession was almost 50-50. So, that's just how bad that defense is. Cameron Hayward's now out for the year. I think you saw the Steelers play as well as they can. It's a very good Cowboys team, certainly, but I don't know that you're going to see a whole lot better than that the rest of the year. They're going to have to hope that other teams, kind of get in their own way a little bit on offense.
Now, what about the Antonio Brown? I know it's a play, but why does he go out of bounds? Why?
Yeah, there's questions like that we've been asking about Antonio Brown, I think, all season. And quite honestly, you can probably extrapolate that back the last couple of years, but his production, which is on par to be good this year, he's going to have a 1,000-yard right. year, he's going to catch a ton of balls, he's going to score some touchdowns. But it's not going to be that, you know, incredible you know, all the good outweighs the bad type of performance that we've seen from him, certainly the past two seasons before this year. He makes the same mistakes that he's made since he was a rookie, plays like that, plays where he appears to either be selfish, or if not selfish, then, you know, the best of worlds would be where he just doesn't think. I don't know which is worse. I don't know whether he knows and just refuses to make the right play or whether he does it out of selfishness. But there's definitely an issue there with Brown where, you know, all the great stuff aside, there are little things that he continues to do. When he's a rookie, a second-year guy, a third-year guy, you shrug your shoulders and say he'll learn. Well, you know, we're beyond that point with him.
I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. I know he's surrounded, but he's had escapability before, and we all marvel at it, but I don't get it. I don't get it. If I'm a teammate, I don't get it. But all right, what about? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that is the ultimate issue. There is where do his teammates stand with that? Now, I don't know. They're all going to say the right things.
Yeah, sure.
But where's the frustration level? I think that's the ultimate question with Brown. Where is that frustration level? Because you're absolutely right. He does so many things so well, but. You know, once the bad starts to not necessarily even outweigh the good, but at least drag it down, that's where you get problems in the locker room, and we just have to wonder, you know, when are those coming?
All right. Exactly. You do have to wonder when those are coming. Now, when you look at Roethlisberger, looked to me like he played pretty darn well the other day. I mean, that's about as well as I think he can play in some ways, especially coming off the injury.
I think it might have been his best game. I mean, he had a couple of drives in the third quarter that you would have liked to see him throw the ball a little better, but then you look at the numbers and say, well, geez, you know, do we want him to be perfect? Well, you know, I guess if you want to outscore the other team and that other team's the Cowboys, then, yeah, I guess you do need him to be perfect. You know, but again, this is the real world. This is the NFL. It's hard to be perfect. And he was very, very good. You're right. He probably wasn't 100%, but he was 100% better than he was a week earlier. And, you know, we know what he can do. We know what his skill level is. But right now he's got to put this team on his shoulders, you know, because the offensive line didn't have a great game. I understand that you know, they're playing one of the better teams out there, a very, very good defense. But, you know, the fact is there's just very, very little margin for error for that offense. And when you have a couple of drives, if you go three and out twice in a row, it becomes really, really hard to play catch up.
How tough is the Hayward deal?
It's awfully tough. I mean, you know, Cameron Hayward's not that John Randall type or a you know, Ndamukong Suh or an Aaron Donald or you know, one of those types that jumps off the page to you defensively and comes out and just makes play after play in the backfield. But Cameron Hayward doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Cameron Hayward is always in the right spot. He takes on the double teams. He penetrates. He frees guys up. He helps the rest of the players around him be that much better. And, you know, it's just an awfully big drop down from Hayward to the next level guy. And it's going to have to be a rotation of guys. It's going to put a lot of pressure on Stephen too. He's going to see a lot of double teams now. And it's just going to be very difficult to let the linebackers, guys like Ryan Shazier, who when he's at his best is making plays all over the field, sideline to sideline. I know that's an overused cliche, but it's true in his case. But if he doesn't have room to run around and he's going to have less room to run around, he's going to make less plays. So an already struggling defense is, you know, really faces a pretty big hit with Hayward out. I think other than Shazier, Hayward's probably the biggest difference maker on that defense.
Does this now make James Harrison the best pass rusher available?
It probably does. You know, it probably does. But, I mean, how often can Harrison at his age go out and be that dominant pass rusher? If you get it half the times in a game, that's probably a lot. You know, Jarvis Jones is playing better. He's now playing solid football for the first time in his career. You know, and they've got decent linebackers. I don't know if the linebackers are necessarily the problem. We know that the secondary is not very good. But with Hayward out, that line just becomes a lot less of an effective tool. And, yeah, I think that as far as guys getting after the quarterback, you know, maybe that is, you know, maybe that says it all, that we're talking about a James Harrison who's a shell of himself, you know, of himself at his peak, is still the guy who one-on-one, you know, in those types of situations can cause the most damage. But I think that probably is the correct answer, especially until Bud Dupree either gets back or is at 100%, which may or may not happen this year.
All right, so give me the pros and cons going. You know, the Browns, it's not as if the Browns have been a team that's been blown out of games, and that's why they're 0-4 in the year, and they're just the worst team going. They're competitive in games. How concerned should the Steelers be about the fact that the Browns have been competitive in games?
Bob Prince called it the hidden vigorous, right? I mean, at some point, the Browns are going to win a football game. Yeah. You know, the more they lose, the closer they are to winning. And, you know, the thing that's funny, and, you know, you and I can laugh about it, and I don't know that the people in the locker rooms are laughing about it, but we asked, you know, you asked at the top of the hour, are the Browns the elixir that the Steelers need? It's a legitimate question for the Browns to be asking that very same question about the Steelers. Are the Steelers the team that if we finally put it together and play well enough, we can beat these guys? They've got some dynamic offensive players. You know, it seems like for the Browns, it all comes down to finding a way to lose, you know, in the fourth quarter. So, you know, if they can just get over that hump, boy, the Steelers are a team that certainly gives you a chance to do that.
Yeah. Penguins last night, not the best night, but what do you think about them so far?
Yeah, it was probably the worst game they've played all year. And as a fan, it's, you know, or I heard a lot of fans talking about the mid-November revenge for the Capitals. And yeah, that's fine. They, you know, they're awfully very good, and they're very good in the middle of November.
Yippee!
Right, exactly. Enjoy those November wins, yeah, because they're few and far between once mid-March arrives, and that has been the case. So. All that said, and yeah, that's easy for fans to slough off, and it's fun for us to talk about. But, you know, I think last night did expose some of what the Penguins' problems can be. Defensively, they still have some issues. If they are going to make a trade with one of the goalies, and it seems like that would be Marc-Andre Fleury, who probably also had his worst game last night, but he wasn't alone. When you lose 7-1, a lot of guys are in line for the worst game of the season.
Right.
If we do make a trade, Steve, you know, it seems like that's where they're soft. That's where they could use some help. When you watch the Penguins and you watch their defense struggle, at times it almost makes you wonder how they won a Stanley Cup last year, because that defense can be very, very bad. You know, when they're going good, the defense is just good enough. So I think that's probably their biggest issue. We know they can score. Every now and then you're going to have a rough night. That's a great goalie in Braden Holtby. It's a great team. In Washington. So, Capitals came ready to play. The Penguins really didn't. Their goaltenders weren't very good last night. Neither one of them were very good. And, you know, when you combine that with a bad defense, I think that's what you get. But I think for the most part, this has been a pretty darn good start for the Penguins. I think they are kind of what we thought they would be. They're a team that can score, they can get after you. But when they're not skating well, when they are a little bit slow, because everything they do is based on speed, you get what you had last night. And there are certainly some teams that are going to be matchup problems. The same teams that were last year, probably. I mean, Tampa Bay is very, very fast. Obviously, we saw what Washington can do. The Rangers are a team to watch out for. And as well as the Canadiens are playing, I'd be remiss not to throw them into that, right, into that group in the East at this point.
Tony, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Still to come on the show today, Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Ryan Dunleavy from NJ.com and the Star Ledger. He's the beat writer for Rutgers. And also coming up on the show, Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagles. So a lot of ground to cover between now and the end of the show. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Was it a good high school football game tonight? State High and Williamsport are playing in Sealands Grove tonight. So I pass that along to you. Two really good teams head-to-head. Tomorrow, Fordham, Bucknell, senior day for Bucknell. And, of course, Penn State football tomorrow night at Rutgers. 8 o'clock the kickoff. Airtime tomorrow set for 6:30. Coming up, bottom of the hour, time for news as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Bob Flounders in just a few moments. PennLive.com, Patriot News. Next half hour, Ryan Dunleavy from NJ.com and the Star Ledger to talk about Rutgers. Final half hour, Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle. Today's show is brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. You need to stock up at this time of the year. Hey, first of all, gift cards. They also make great gifts. You want to show up at parties with something. You want to make sure if somebody shows up at your house, you have plenty of beverages for it. They have free parking. They also have plenty of help in there to get the cases out to the vehicle. It's really well laid out, wide aisles, and very organized with a lot of help in there for you. And you want selection? Well, Brewers Outlet has great selection. Imports, domestics, microbrews. It's the best selection of beer anywhere. Water, soft drinks, wine coolers, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register when you exit. In the pickle bar, I talk about it. I love the barrels, I love the dills, but they have a wide variety, a great selection of the pickle bar, and it is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, 1943. Philadelphia Phillies president William Cox was banned from baseball for betting on his team. Really? Sounds like baseball is marvelously consistent on this. The president of the Phillies bet on his team and they banned him for life. Interesting. 1949, Jackie Robinson of the Brooklyn Dodgers named the National League's most valuable player. Chuck Connors became the first player to oppose the Major League Draft in 1951. He later became the star of the television show The Rifleman. 1966, Sandy Koufax of the Dodgers surprised everybody and announced his retirement from baseball. I think he was only 30 at the time. He was coming off a 27-win season. A 27-win season, retired because he had an arthritic shoulder, that left shoulder of his. 1985, gruesome injury. Joe Theismann of the Redskins broke his leg after being hit by Lawrence Taylor of the Giants in a Monday night game. The injury ended Theismann's 12-year NFL career. 1996, Chris Bunnell from the Dallas Cowboys tied an NFL record. 7 field goals in a game against the Packers tied the record of Jim Bakken of the St. Louis Cardinals, then St. Louis Cardinals, of course. And in 1997, the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays participated in their initial expansion draft. The D-backs eventually won the World Series in 2001. The Tampa Bay Rays eventually got to the World Series in 2008, where they lost to the Philadelphia Phillies. And that is this day in sports history. Time now to bring in Bob Flounders, PentLive.com, and the Patriot News. Bob, welcome. It's always great to hear you on the other end.
Steve, always a pleasure. Plenty to talk about. I mean, it's just one of the more amazing mid-Novembers, I think, in recent memory, I think, for Penn State.
So as you've watched this play out, what are some thoughts that have run through your mind?
It's hard to focus on one, but I think I said this before, just the 180 that Penn State's been able to pull off since the Michigan game number one. And also, to me, I just think a couple of things that, to me, I think are flying a little bit under the radar. Number one is the development and the play of the defensive line and the depth of that unit. I didn't really think by the end of September that they were where they needed to be. Now, I know there's some young players, but, Steve, I'm trying to remember when Penn State had depth like this on the defensive line. They've had some good teams over the years.
Right.
Even that, you know, 2005 team, those guys never came off the field, the front four. Mm-hmm. They just were on the field. They played 60, 65 snaps, and they were remarkably fresh. Sean Spencer has developed a group that is legitimately, I think, 12 deep or more, and that depth is showing up late in games. You saw it against Ohio State You saw it against even Indiana when Kevin Givens made that play on fourth down. I just think that has really gone from kind of one of the weaker links to a strength. The other thing, Steve, is just I really enjoy watching kind of – I think when James brought in Joe Moorhead and then also Matt Limegrover, it just seems like no matter what goes on in a game, whether it's injuries or adjustments, nothing is too big. The moment never becomes too big. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of figure things out on the fly and implement them. And you're seeing that show up in the second halves of games where, I mean, they are clearly one, if not the best, one of the best teams in the Big Ten in the second half on offense. Consistently, to me, that's been an overriding theme throughout this win streak, just how well they've played on offense and how well they've been able to adjust and figure things out. Those things really, I mean, I know it's easy to focus on, you know, the college playoff and the Big Ten title game chances and all of that, but just the improvement they've made since, you know, the second half of that Minnesota game and the strides they've made, to me, it's just something that I'm just not really, you know, used to seeing with the Penn State team, not only in the last couple of years, but even before that.
There, you mentioned Sean Spencer, so let's start with, I want to stay with the defensive line for a moment. This is something that was done by James Franklin and Sean Spencer at Vanderbilt. In certain situations, they put four defensive ends in. I remember we made a big deal about how Ohio State does it, because I consider Givens a converted defensive end. So Givens, Buchholz, they put Sharif Miller, Torrence Brown out there. What has that package meant to what Penn State's been able to do in terms of pressure and what they and the possibilities with it?
Well, I mean, I think what it means is you can get home with four, and you don't have to blitz. If you want to blitz, you can.
Yeah.
If you see a matchup to exploit, but you can get home or get close to get home with four, and it's not it's those guys. They also have – they're keeping Sickles and Schwann fresh. And it's just, I mean, I just think that, you know, typically the thinking, Steve, is that as a game goes on, you know, a decent offensive line can wear out a decent defensive line. But I think the opposite is happening with Penn State. I think they're starting to wear out. I think they wore out Ohio State's offensive line in the fourth quarter. And I think that the same thing happened. That was not a bad Indiana offensive line.
Nope.
And they just, they can take over games because they're fresh, and you're right. I mean, I think the biggest thing with that look that you described where they're playing, you know, you can make a case three or four defensive ends at the same time when it's long yardage is it gives Brent Pry a lot more options on the back end with the linebackers and you know, the diamond and nickel packages. You know, when Bob Shoup was there, it just seemed to me that Brent Pry can blitz if he wants to, but he doesn't have to. And, you know, whereas Bob Shoup was always blitzing, I think Brent Pry, depending on the opponent and depending on the situation, has mixed and matched a little bit differently than Bob Shoup did. And I think that look and the fact that Penn State's deep there, Steve, has a lot to do with it.
What did it tell you, though, about Brent Pry at the end that he sent Bell on that play?
Yeah, like I said, and it was the right thing to do. I think that Brent, as the season has gone on, has gotten really good. We talk about adjustments as the game has gone on. He's gotten really good at seeing what the other team is trying to do and exploiting it. With it's not just blitzing, but it's timely blitzes and it's blitzes where there's a mismatch that he's seen as the game's gone on. And Brandon Bell, I just think, Steve, it's great. I remember, you know, Brandon Bell, when he's healthy and he has his legs under him, he's one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten because of all the things he can do. Mm-hmm. He had a good year last year, but he was not 100%. And I think he's much healthier at this time this year than he was last year. And you're seeing the benefits of that. And I think that Penn State has made a concerted effort to try and keep him a little bit fresh, more fresh, and the defensive depth in general, not just the defensive line, but in the secondary, has really helped this team. I thought the defensive backs maybe had better days than they had against Indiana, are capable of playing better, and I think you're going to see them bounce back as the season goes on. I think that's a pretty deep group, and I think they can play better. I think they will.
we've talked about the defense. We know linebacker at one point was decimated. Now, for the most part, it's become healthy. Right now, that epidemic is on the offensive line. What do you think about the offensive line and the group that you saw at the end, which was with Dowry, Gonzalez, Gaia, Wright, and Bates?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, that is not the dream scenario for Penn State and for Matt Limegrover. But I just think, though, that I was watching as the game went on between breaks, and, you know, Palmer goes out, McGovern goes out, I think, late in the game. Mm-hmm. And you watch when the offense is on the sideline, and you see Matt Limegrover talking to the guys, communicating, obviously trying to clear some things up. I think Joe Moorhead went over there a couple of times. But no matter what kind of adversity they faced up front, and you know, Ryan Bates going from left guard to left tackle and playing, you know, pretty well also,
mm-hmm. Yep.
They stayed with the run. And it was not only, to me, I thought it was important, but not only did they stay with the run, but it paid off. And also, I think people, you know, it wasn't just the offensive line. There was another challenge there. I don't think Trace was healthy enough to really be the runner mm-hmm. that he has been earlier in the year. And it all kind of affected Saquon as well, because Indiana knew that. And that's a big component of that offense, is honoring or respecting Trace, keeping the ball and turning upfield. He really couldn't do that. He stayed in the game. So that was not really – that was a Penn State offense that was very challenged, I thought, down the stretch. They stayed with the run. Steven Gonzalez and Derek Dowry at the guard spots, you're right. And to still finish strong the way that they did. I just, like I said, I think that this is a team that now expects to win, expects to adjust. And, you know, they're finding different ways to win. I think it says a lot about the players. But I also think it says a lot about the coaching development and what goes on in games. And I don't know that I always saw that, maybe the two previous years.
Finally, what are you looking at on Saturday night? What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, I mean, I think Rutgers, obviously, just kind of looking at what happened to them at Michigan State, they were embarrassed. Now they're at home, prime time. I think whatever they have left in the tank, Penn State's going to see it, and mm-hmm. I think it'll probably be a lot tougher game than people realize, especially early. I think that Penn State, you know, their offensive line is going to be an issue. I'm not sure Connor McGovern can go, and I think you might have to see more of Steven Gonzalez. The losses at the tackle position, they finally get Paris Palmer up to speed, the poor kid starting to play well, and that has to happen to him. They're going to be challenged probably to figure some things out. But what I do think will happen, though, is I think you will see the Penn State defense make some plays in that game early and late to help the offense. And I do think that the team has received James Franklin's message about focusing on the task at hand and not thinking too far ahead. They have a lot to play for. These guys play hard. I think they want to play for each other, and I think that you will see in the second half this team pull away. I don't think it's an accident that they've scored 40-plus in the last three games, and I do think that, you know, Rutgers has trouble stopping the run, and that does not bode well when you're going to face Saquon Barkley. I'll be interested to see how many carries Saquon gets, Steve, only because he had so many against Indiana, and they were tough carries.
Yeah, 33 of them.
He didn't have a lot of easy moments. 11 of those, I think, were ended in lost yards.
Right.
I think if James and Joe get a chance to get up in the third quarter, I really think they're going to try and play some other people, because they got to keep these guys fresh for the stretch run. But I do look for them to finish strong once again.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, you got to see.
Bob Flounders, PennLive.com and the Patriot News. Great to have him on the show today. Next half hour will be Ryan Dunleavy from NJ.com and the Star Ledger. He'll join us. Beat writer who covers Rutgers will get his perspective on how Rutgers has played to this point and some of the keys to tomorrow night's game. Final half hour, Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle. So plenty to talk about on today's show, and a valuable lesson learned from last night's Louisville game. against Houston. Louisville came in. Now, let me take this from two different tacks. Let's start with this one. Number one, when the day began yesterday, there were four teams between Penn State and the final college football playoff spot. On this particular afternoon, there are now three teams between Penn State and the final playoff spot because Louisville lost last night. Now let's get to the other part. When the college football playoff rankings came out on Tuesday night, Louisville's players sent out a series of angry tweets and then went out and couldn't back it up last night. Houston dominated the line of scrimmage, and Houston dominated the game. They won 36-10. When the season began, many had circled this game as a critical game for Houston in this because Houston was trying to be the team like they did last year. They got to the Peach Bowl last year. They beat Florida State in the Peach Bowl, as a matter of fact. Well, then Houston opened the season and beat Oklahoma. And everyone then circled this game as this would be the game that could get them in. Well, then Houston stumbled in the middle of the season. It's just a long season. Things happen. They lost to Navy. They lost to SMU. But this was their game last night where they could play at home, play against a ranked team, make their statement, play spoiler, and they did. Louisville was angry about what was going on. Louisville did not ignore the noise. They didn't block it out. I know everyone wants to talk, I understand. Fans are excited. They want to talk about it. You should talk about it. Your fans, you should talk about it. Talk show hosts, of course, talk about it. Columnists write about it. The players can't deal with it. They can't. James Franklin is so right about trying to do whatever he can to close it off, and it's not easy in this era of social media. It's far more difficult now in the era of social media to block out the noise, but he's been very consistent with his message to his team, and I'm around when he delivers these messages in meetings, end of practice, things like that, where it's just deal with what you can do. There is a bottom line. We talk about controlling your own destiny. Well, you can control your own destiny in the game you play. Penn State plays Rutgers tomorrow night. Penn State needs to win the game. By winning the game, they stay in the conversation. Okay, tomorrow night's game is not the be-all, end-all to get them to the end. Tomorrow night's game is a game that's critical to keep them in the conversation and keep it going. And that's why it's a critical game for Penn State tomorrow night. Why they need to block out the noise. Louisville did not block out the noise at all. And then, according to the sideline reporter last night, they're arguing with each other on the sideline. They just completely lost their poise about this whole thing. They lost their poise on Tuesday. They lost their poise during the game last night. And Houston dominated them. Houston owned the line of scrimmage. Lamar Jackson is a great player. He'll probably still win the Heisman Trophy. But you can't get anything done when your offensive line is not getting anything done in front of you. And last night, Lamar Jackson was sacked 11 times in the game. He was sacked 11 times. I don't care how great a player you are. You get no help up front, you are not going anywhere. And he didn't get much help at all last night. And Louisville is now out of the conversation. Because when they had an opportunity to control their own destiny and win last night's game and just try to keep winning and keep themselves in the conversation, they didn't. Houston's a very good team. Houston's playing at home. Louisville did a lousy job of controlling its own destiny, what they can control. They got caught up in the noise, and they didn't get the job done when they can control their own destiny and lost 36-10. That's the big lesson out of last night's game, as far as I'm concerned. That's why when you hear James Franklin poo-poo questions about it. When you hear me on this show, I've tried to take a measured approach to all this. And the reason I take a measured approach is that I've been around teams a long time in my life. And I've been around successful teams in my life. And so I've seen the approach they've had to take to get there. That's the reason why, because I've been around them. Not just covering them, but been around them.
That's why a little different understanding. All right, top of the hour coming up at news, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.